Warning. Process of getting a Dharma tongue has a lot of phases for me. It seems to be rather predictable. At first, I'm just so cool about it. And then I get really nervous about it. It's a whole lot of fun. Self comments about it. And then I'm really hard to sleep. And then I look out at all of you. And then I get I'm so very grateful for that. I see so many so helpful to me. So I want to thank Galen, who, because of the miracle of the internet, is getting a Dharma talk in Georgia. to thank her for all of her teaching for me. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what I'm practicing with a lot these days. It's really interesting to me. And that is the relationship between the relative and absolute reality. So for those of you who may not know, reality is looked at in a couple ways. One is relative, everything that's concrete. This camera, those people on Zoom, this table, all the concepts that we work with in our lives, that's relative. That's everything we deal with every day. And then there's something else, something beyond words, beyond ideas, beyond concepts, beyond signs, meaning things, meaning things. And that's the ultimate reality. So Dogen, who was the founder of our school, was really interested in this. And he studied the question of this relationship a lot. He wrote a lot about it. So a lot of what we read in Soto Zen is about this relationship. Yeah, so I will tell you the first paragraph of the Genjo Koan. Some of us here have been studied with me, luckily for me, the Genjo Koan. And this is the first paragraph of that koan, which is sometimes called the most essential teaching of all of Zen. So here it is. As all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice, birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient beings, no birth and death. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings, and Buddhas. Yet, an attachment blossoms fall, and an aversion meets spread. Now, I know this is all obvious to you, but I will explain it a little more. So, in the first sentence, he's talking about relative reality. All things are Buddha Dharma. So what he's saying is everything in this universe is Buddha Dharma. Everything is part of that. So in the relative world, there are all these things, delusion, realization, practice, birth and death, and there are sentient beings. Then he talks about this other concept really important in Zen, which is the concept of emptiness. Emptiness means nothing has an independent, totally self contained existence. Everything is interconnected and therefore empty of its own special separate existence. So the next sentence is, as the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. So he's saying, okay, here are all these relative things, and also there's the ultimate, which is there is all, it's all empty. Nothing really exists in that way. So the Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one, thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. So basically, could we live somewhere in between? Could we notice something in between? So if everything is Buddha Dharma, then how do relative and ultimate work together? Non-dualistically, nothing separate. Dogen, after all his study, decided that both exist, but that ultimately relative exists within this ultimate reality. So all of Buddha Dharma is really the ultimate reality. So today, as you have heard, is the celebration for Buddha's birthday. Happy birthday, Buddha. This is what he awakened to and what he taught us to awaken to. The realization of a boundless field of vision and experience. And really importantly, that whole world is within us. And while we take care of the Buddha baby, so I hope you all stay with me, you'll be pouring water over the Buddha baby, we're also taking care of our own selves. This is a reflection of us. Now, I think living in these kinds of realities is pretty cool and a wondrous way of looking at our existence. Living in this reality so perfectly intertwined continuously while we choose moment and moment by moment what we want to pay attention to. The beauty, what's abhorrent, the joy, the sadness, and that we are all co-creating it all at the time, in every moment, and living it. So for many of us who are here, we hear this voice in us, the calling that says there's more to our existence than what we just see or hear, feel or touch. That we are more than this body and mind, something more than ourselves. And even though we may not know it consciously, especially when we first start practice, there's this voice that holds us there. We are seekers. And it might just be curiosity. It might be dissatisfaction. It might be just real suffering that's pulled us here. And maybe when we realize something, we call it enlightenment or awakening or realization. Or maybe we just want to know what it's like to be fully human, what it is to have this experience in this particular life. And ultimately, how do we save all beings? So I think it's quite compelling to stay focused in this relative world. You know, we can get busy with our everyday activities and pressures of our lives. It can be so tempting to think that we control everything. And just with our efforts, our hope, our aspiration, we can make what happen. We can make anything happen. We read O Magazine. You know what I'm saying? So it's everywhere. Or we just get advice from Google, which tells us all about that. And there are so many wonderful things to realize and experience in this relative world that I really would not want to be without it. But there are pitfalls too. When we get too attached to this physical world, it can be fearful and dissatisfying and just plain an unhappy place to be. The Buddha taught us that this clinging is the source of our suffering. And if we're lucky, the futility of this becomes apparent to us. There are so many teachings about how we can realize and awaken to this understanding of our reality, especially if we think we're separate from it, like someone was outside of us. Like, I got to confess, I realized that I had this idea that maybe some bodhisattva with a wand would come by and just tap me on the head and say, enlightened. It's sort of like some of the teachings, but that doesn't work that way. And I think some people think if they just sit really, really hard and they sit really, really ambitiously, that they will awaken. You're really challenged with that idea here, because you know we're taught there are no attaining ideas. So I would propose another idea today, and that is that we just surrender. Not surrender in the way that we're typically taught, that we are forced to defeat, that we have to hand over control or possessions with some kind of force. Not that kind of surrender. What I'm speaking about is surrender in which you yield, you soften, you allow, you open to, you just relax. To agree to stop fighting, hiding, and resisting. In other words, to open to what is already in us, waiting to come forward. Now, I don't mean that surrender is a passive process, like I don't have to do anything anymore. It's a very active process to let go, to open, to release, to relax, to realize that what we hold on to in this concrete world is just an aspect of the larger, measurable, boundless consciousness in which we are continually, inescapably existing. Like, so much of what we do here, surrender that I speak of, is a wholehearted practice. We bring our whole selves to this letting go, this relaxation. So I want to read to you one of my favorite koans called Chiano No Water Dumun. And this is really about what I'm talking about. So Chiano was a servant in a Zen convent, and she wanted to practice Zazen. So one day she approached an elderly nun and said, "I'm of humble birth, I can't read or write, and I have to work all the time. Is there any possibility that I could attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" The nun answered, "This is wonderful. My dear, in Buddhism, there are no distinctions among people. There is only this. Each person must hold fast to the desire to awaken and cultivate a heart of compassion. People are complete just as they are. If you don't fall into delusive thoughts, there is no Buddha and no sentient being. There is only one complete nature. If you want to know your true nature, you need to turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zen." Chiano said with happiness, "With this practice as my companion, I have only to go about my daily life, practicing day and night." After months of wholehearted practice, she went out on the full moon night to draw some water from the well. The bottom of her bucket, held together by bamboo strips, suddenly gave way, and a reflection of the moon vanished with water. When she saw this, she attained great realization. Her enlightenment poem was, "With this and that, I tried to keep my bucket together, and then the bottom fell out, where water does not collect, and the moon does not." So how did she do it? How did she come to this great realization? Well, I'm not sure, but what I think is she did it by living her life mindfully and with ease. She just continued to practice day by day, and she paid attention and finally just let go. Her practice was her life, nothing special. So if everything is Buddha Dharma, then awakening is in every moment. Everything right here, right now. She just paid attention to her life and the moments of enlightenment with ease, and like the water in her bucket, she just let go. I want to say something about these moments of enlightenment that we have the opportunity to notice all the time. I'm not sure what they're like for you. We all have probably different ones, but I appreciate this teaching that they are here. So for me, I was noticing sometimes I might look at a flower or hear a beautiful poem or see a beautiful piece of art, and I go somewhere else, something expands. Or when I look at the beautiful faces of our grandchildren, I just am somewhere else. I think these might be moments of enlightenment. So here's another poem about living in the moment. This is a poem by Pang Yang. "My daily activity is not unusual. I just remain in spontaneous harmony, not grasping or rejecting, nothing left to assert or oppose. What use are fancy titles and expensive clothes of vermilion? The entire mountain is free of even a speck of dust. Supernatural powers and miraculous activity, touching water and carrying fire." So I might just say to you, everything's opportunity for awakening, and then I would be between them. But I decided I would say, because there are certainly other ways to prepare our field of awareness, to till and fertilize the soil that is within each of us. So I can't underestimate or underscore the importance of study. And we do a lot of that here, to read and study the teachings of the Buddha, the stories, the teachings of our ancestors and masters who guide us through their own study and realizations and who really are supporting our efforts to awaken. Study, however, is not an end to itself. It's not just an intellectual experience. We can utilize these great teachings of our ancestors to leap into our own understanding and growth. I don't think these teachings were meant to stress us out or remind us of how much we don't know, but rather to inspire us to enter body and mind, teaching and reminding us to relax in what we deeply know about ourselves. And how about the Brahma Viharas? One of my favorite teachings. How do they help carry us to waking up? So the Brahma Viharas are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, feeling joy for others, and equanimity, kind of balance. So I thought if I could really allow myself to love and find compassion for everyone and everything, absolutely no exception, would that lead me to know the compassion that is ultimate reality? This might seem like an impossible task, but especially to send my thoughts to those who seem despicable or unloving, to really open to the suffering, to totally feel joy for everyone else's good fortune and success. Maybe it's just surrendering to who and what we really are, totally interconnected, loving, compassionate beings. We are all in this together. Letting go of the hardness, the criticism, the anger, the hurt that we hold so tightly might take us somewhere. Could we relax and just let the world love us? It is the path to actualize our vow to save all beings as well. Maybe we can't attain this complete love and kindness and compassion in every moment, but intention and wholeheartedness really matters. So I would like to tell you a story about that from the Hasidic tradition, a very ultra-Orthodox Jewish spiritual mystical tradition. So here it is. When Baal Shem Tov, who was the founder of Hasidic Judaism and through our dope in a way, saw the tragedy of the Jewish people, he went to a special place in the forest, and he lit a special candle, and he said a special prayer, and the tragedy was over. His disciple, Magid, had to intervene for the Jewish people in the same way. So he went to ask heaven, the master of the universe, I don't know, but I lit the candle. I'm in the forest. And we just have the miracle. And again, the miracle was gone. Then a disciple, Magid, went to the forest to save his people. I don't know how to light the fire. I don't know the prayer. But I am here in the forest. Will that work? Would that be sufficient? And the miracle was accomplished. Then Magid's great-grandson wanted to avert the threat. He sat in his armchair and said, I don't know how to light a fire. I don't know the prayer. I don't even know the place in the forest. But all I have is to tell you the story and to ask for your help. And that was enough too. So when we acknowledge who we are with our full hearts, we become very, very powerful and very able to make a difference. So finally, I want to speak about Zazen, because it's so central to our practice here. And importantly so, because it's a place where we collect ourselves and look inward. Zazen is not meant to be a practice to strive or to achieve, or even to necessarily just get calm and let go of all of our thoughts and be empty of thoughts. It's rather a place to surrender ourselves to what's happening and to relax in who we are, sitting in our lives in Zazen. So Dobin says that Zazen is enlightenment itself. He says, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation, It is simply the Dharma gate of a closed endless. The practice realization of totally culminated. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. And then he also says, you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, and your original face will be manifest. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without the light. So when I think about Zen practice in general, I think it's a lot about surrender, letting go of greed, hate, delusion, accepting, surrendering to the way things are, not clinging to who we think we are, but opening to this limitless, homeless view. It's such a happier, ultimate, calmer place to be and a great way to live. So today on Guru's birthday, I say happy birthday to all of you. And say that I hope Brad practice can bring you this happiness, joy, and love that it's brought to you.